you do need to pee on your Shakespeare.
Right. And what you mean by pee on it is you need to be a real person. You need to personalize it. And that's the trap in a lot of Shakespeare is all of a sudden I have to be this huge performative thou wilt that, like, you're in using all this fancy language. But then if you step away from that, you're like, I've never seen a human being do those things and talk like that. That's not a human. So it is humanizing things and personalized things. And at the end of the day, casting does really want to see you. Because, hello, it is you. It's not a character. It's not them or he or her. It's fucking you. It's your body. It's your voice. And you're opposite another human being. So it's the trap of, if you're playing the idea of a character, which I 100% have been guilty of a million times. And when I first started working on Shakespeare, that's the instinct, is to be this, and just put on this affect of your voice, and then you're like, that's not a human being. I've never seen anyone like that before.
Laughing Vikings Live. High vibe chats with actors, comedians, and creators, plus stand-up comedy, sketch comedy, and most importantly, you. That's right, join us every Monday for new episodes, and you can be a part of the show on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Twitch. Ask questions and interact in the comments, and make sure to share this with your actor, comedian, and creator friends so they can be a part of the show too. Can't make a live show? No problem. You can catch up on your favorite podcast platform and visit laughingvikings.com to find out how you can join the cast and crew. All right, it's time for today's show. Buckle up. And make sure you stick around to the end, because we have a special surprise for you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Laughing Vikings Live. Happy Monday Fun Day. Let's go.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. It is Canadian Thanksgiving here at Laughing Vikings. I'm Lars. This is the BK Broiler joining me. How are you, BK?
I'm doing fantastic, Lars. It's been an uplifting day. I've really enjoyed myself today.
You've got a lot of pep to your step, despite what I assume was a weekend of jamming yourself full of turkey tryptophan. But you've recovered already, yeah.
Well, Lars, food turns into energy, and you know me. I'm just I'm an abundance of it.
Right. And I was up at my dad and stepmother's this weekend. It's actually just Sunday, overnight Sunday. And we had dinner Sunday night with Camille was there as well.
How's Fred doing?
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. Yeah, he had some pumpkin pie and he had some soup. He's not quite worked his way up to full meals just due to some swallowing issues yet. But slowly but surely making progress. But it was a great night, great weekend. I got leftovers. You had a slice of the pumpkin pie.
Did so, Lois make that homemade?
All as well. Did she make it? Yeah, I think she did.
Damn, that was great. Pumpkin pie.
Yep. Yeah.
I know when you gave it to me, you're like, and it's made with real pumpkin. And part of me is real. Like, is pumpkin pie actually made with pumpkin? Because sometimes, hopefully. Like, they're not. Like, I don't think... Right. Lemon meringue pie is made with like real lemons. It's like a lemon kind of custard, right?
It's a delicious lemony chemically blend.
Yeah, it's natural lemon flavoring.
Yeah, I don't know what meringue actually is. I feel like meringue
is like sugar.
Sugar and eggs. And
egg whites, and you whip it, and then it hardens. Yeah, it's great. Oh, whip meringue. Yes. Meringue's the best. My grandma would make homemade lemon meringue pie. She was great at it. Oh my God. That meringue.
You know what I always say? When life gives you lemons, make lemon meringue pie.
You do. And it always reminds me of her when you say it, actually. So
fuck lemonade. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can make lemonade with your lemons if you want. If you really want to turn lemons into something, turn it into lemon meringue pie. That's even better. Yes. So I had a great day yesterday. We got out to some nature. Mm-hmm. Camille and I went on a nice hike through the forest up near Orillia and had a nice relaxing dinner. And I think it's a great thing. Like I'm I love all holidays. Obviously, I think everyone does. You get an extra day to spend time with family and friends.
Yeah.
But if you're watching this right now, I think you got to really realize, despite all the things going on in the world, you got to be thankful for your life. And again, anyone watching or listening, that means you're in some sense of a first world country with an internet connection and a computer or a smartphone. And you, despite all the bad news, and we had this conversation over dinner, if you pay attention to the news and to the headlines, which are designed to be sensational because bad news sells better than good news, you need to realize that the world is better than it's ever been. Maybe with the one exception might be climate change, because that's had a cumulative effect. But as far as our lifestyle and our way of life and our life expectancy and our quality of life, that on Earth has gotten better and better and better with every decade. Now, I also want to recognize you and I are speaking from a place of white male privilege. Yes. And it's real easy to say, yeah, life's so easy for a white male. So I will say that. That's a little caveat to have there. And I can't speak to the experience of certain ethnicities or certain colors of people who have had challenges. But even there, I would wager to guess, and maybe it's not my place to guess, but I would say even there has been largely progressive over the years. So all under the heading, not to say, oh, the world's fucking perfect and everything's amazing, but I think you got to be thankful for all the amazing things that you do have in your life, regardless of those bad things. And the more thankful and the more grateful you are, the better you're going to feel about your scenario. There's always silver linings. Even if you have a problem, rather than seeing that problem as something that's happening to you, you see it as something that's happening for you. What's the lesson? What do I need to learn? What is it that about this shitty situation that's going to make me stronger for the future? All of those things, and just really be grateful for what you do have, regardless of what you don't have, is kind of the ongoing lesson for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and continued reminders that you're in the place that you need to be for the thing that you're learning that sometimes you don't even consciously know. Like, I know for me, like, it's about the journey. It's about getting there. It's not about getting there fast. It's not about getting there, like, winning to get there or hitting the home run, you know? It's getting there at your own pace and at your own time and doing things for you, because that's really what it comes down to in the end, is trying to, no one else is going to give a shit about your career or give a shit about the things that you care about. You have to take ownership of it. You have to take ownership of the things that you want to do and the projects that you want to create and everything that makes everything in life that you get, or the everything in life that's good, happens for a reason. And it happens at the right time for you to appreciate those things. I remember when I booked Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, like, I was so ecstatic. I was so happy. And I thought it was like the groundbreaking thing, like the thing that was going to change my life. And oh my God, I'm on a movie set for 4 days and I'm doing some ADR and that's going to be fucking awesome. Change my whole life. And you're still, it doesn't. You're still the same person you are. And I think Jordan Belfort even talks about that. Like, When he was at the top of the Wolf of Wall Street saga, he was still like, I'm still this shy person that just wanted to make some money and like didn't know how to talk to girls. Like, that was it. That's why I did all those drugs and that's why I did all those things, is because I still was this self-conscious person. Or like, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think a big lesson and a recurring theme for any artist and any actor is, It's not about these little victories or it's never going to be something external that makes you happy. And if you're at a point in your life where you're like, oh, I just got to book this role or make this amount of money or get on this show or that show, you're constantly going to be unhappy, because everyone across every field Doesn't matter whether they're Michael Jordan. Doesn't matter whether they're millionaire, billionaire, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Academy Award winners, Jim Carrey. They accomplish the thing. And for like a half hour, maybe an hour, maybe the night at the gala, or maybe the next day, a little bit of like reflected glory of, oh man, wasn't that amazing? But then the day after, you're left with you and your thoughts. So it's really more about trying to reach a place, and it's kind of a zen-like place where you're just realizing I'm everything I'm gonna be. I have everything I already need inside me, and making that really the big epiphany, rather than, oh, I gotta get this and I gotta get that. It's more of a realization of strip everything in the world away, and then what are you left with? You're left with you and your own being of light and love, and your own thoughts, and then and then a notch away from that is your family and friends. And then really that's what it is. Cause you take an Oscar, you take $1 billion, you take an Olympic gold medal, you take away your family and friends, then you would arguably, I think you would say, you don't really have anything. So all of that is, all that stuff is nice, or having a fan. And this isn't to say not to set goals.
Yeah.
But that's to set goals, kind of just to give yourself in this plane on earth something to do, and maybe to something to grow into.
And but like those goals isn't always the picture perfect thing that you imagine it was going to be. Right. Sometimes it's just a little bit different, and like, it's still just as rewarding, sometimes even more rewarding looking back on it, like for what it teaches you. But I think it's embracing the idea that nothing is perfect.
Yeah, go on. Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, perfection is something that just haunts people and constantly leaves them in a state of not feeling like they're good enough. And it's a huge trap. I think it's certainly not about perfection. It's about realizing you are what you are in this moment and making the most of it, being grateful for what you have. And then I think still, I don't want to take away like, oh, just be lazy and don't have any goals and aspirations. That's not good either, because growth is a part of life that fulfills all of us, but it's never going to be some external thing. And as far as expectations, really, that's a ton of people in any form of success coaching talk about releasing expectations. Like maybe set your goal like it's already happened, because you realize, hey, like you're this incredible fucking being that it can have everything in the world that you actually want to have eventually. But releasing the expectation that it has to be on a specific timeline, or it has to be a specific way, and just being open to, okay, I'd like to get there, but let's see how this ride goes, and let's see how this plays out. And then you have the realization of like, huh, I didn't expect this to happen. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that curious? Or someone said, replace frustration with fascination. Something weird, like you get hit with an eight ball or some random scenario, instead of seeing that, oh my God, I'm so frustrated, this has completely fucked up my plans. Maybe that car accident on the way to where you were going that you survived saved you from a fatal car accident that you would have had when you got there. You know what I mean? Like little things like that. Like you trip on the sidewalk and smash your phone, but that extra 5 second beat was the 5 second beat to fall down that you needed to prevent you from walking into traffic and getting hit by a bus. So yeah, I think it's just that constant realization that you have everything that you're going to need. The universe is constantly working to provide things for you, not to you. I'm a big believer in life is happening for you, not to you. So that even when shitty things or seemingly shitty things happen, there's still a way for you to be like, oh, okay, what's the lesson that I needed to learn here? And if you read or listen to any podcast episode, read a book or listen to a podcast episode of quote unquote super successful person, almost all of them have at some point, or if not one, they have multiple stories in their origin story of the shittiest things happening, where they were at rock bottom, they lost everything, they lost the dream job, they had devastating health things happen to them, they had a devastating relationship end, and then they look back and it's like, holy shit, without that thing happening to me, I wouldn't have been anywhere near where I am right now. And so it's also turning those things into lessons and turning obstacles into stepping stones is a great way that I've heard it put, rather than lamenting like, oh, woe is me, life didn't work out perfect. Because the reality is the universe is, to a certain degree, there's a lot of randomness happening and just a lot of chaos. So to be so controlling that you're going to control, certainly controlling other people is a fucking waste of time. So anyone who's walking around like, well, you weren't here when I thought you were going to be here. You didn't do what I thought you were going to do. Or like,
but it's like what Tom says, right? Like, I want you to change because this is how I see you, right? You're fighting for that.
Right.
Right. You're fighting for the perception that you in your mind have this image of what Lars should be. And that's how I believe you should act.
Right.
Right. And that gives you motivation to fight for. And that gives you something to fight for. That also gives you a little competition as well, because you're like, this is how you should be. And you're like, no, this is how I should be.
Right. And all of this comes back to fear-based decisions and thoughts versus love-based decisions and thoughts. And it's kind of finding that sweet spot in the middle where, yeah, the fear exists on both sides, but you're going to plow through it. Actually, there's a great example today in our class. We have our scene study on Mondays in conservatory. And I won't name her just for privacy sake, but we don't know who's going to be called up. We're sort of, everyone's supposed to be at the ready. And then he'll say, oh, Lars, what do you got for us today? And whatever you're working on, you bring it up and you work on it. You take a clean rip at it solo, and then a stop and start rehearsal with Tom directing, giving you coaching and feedback. And he called on someone, and she was going through some, she didn't elaborate, but she emotionally wasn't in a great spot. I think maybe her scheduling over the last week had been kind of crazy. And so her initial reaction was, no, I don't want to go today. I'd rather defer, and I'm not ready, essentially, was what it was. And you could tell that she was emotional and not really feeling great about that either. Like, it wasn't like she was just like happy about it. She was a little distraught and feeling like, I'm just not feeling it. This isn't today. I'm not prepared. I haven't worked on this. And he had a conversation with her and kind of coached her through that a lot of the times, like, courage, it's the idea of courage isn't the absence of fear. Courage is acting in the face of fear. And all of us need to learn that lesson. And after a few minutes, she was still reluctant. After all that, he was like, so what are we going to work on? And she was like, what? I don't want to work on. I thought I told you I don't want to work on it. And a little more talking. And finally, she just took a deep breath. And she had a monologue in her back pocket that she'd been working on. And she delivered it. And she was actually, it was full of fresh emotion. And it was full of fresh vulnerability. And it was very, very real. And it turned out to be one of the best performances she'd ever had, because she sort of had that, our improv coach calls it fuck it and love it mentality, where you're like, fuck it, this doesn't mean anything. Yeah. But also at the same time, loving it because it's something that you really love to do, but not loving it so much that you're obsessed with it and it has to be perfect.
Yep.
And it was a huge lesson for all of us to see her fight through that. And then I think the lesson for us is anytime, like, the power in being in a situation where you don't want to go forward because you have feelings of fear or feelings of lack or not being enough or whatever. Again, that's expectations. She's thinking in her head, my expectations of me performing in a class, I need to be here energy and prep wise and all that stuff. So, but for her to walk away, like, the lesson to drive through that, and then now, and I don't know, I haven't talked to her, but I'm assuming she probably feels way better about herself now after class, having fought through that and gone through it. And then she got all the praise from classmates being like, way to go, you went through it, instead of shrinking to the challenge and being like, nah, I'll go next week. It's a huge lesson. And I think that all of us can use that lesson of, every time you're at that point where you're like, no, I can't do this, the importance to just go for it, to drive through that. Those are the moments like that are going to solidify you or I'm grasping for the word, but just really strengthen you where you're like, oh, fuck. Remember those dozen times where I thought I was down and out? It's kind of the Rocky phrase about you get knocked down 9 times. That's fine as long as you get up 10 times.
Yep.
And to not take those. So it was a huge lesson. And also the interesting thing, when you're in that position and you don't want to go and you're just feeling like, oh, I'm not enough. I'm not prepared. I'm not there mentally, emotionally. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. Everyone else, I know I felt this. I'm watching her and I'm like, in my head, I'm just like, go for it. Just do it. Come on, just do it. Because that's the weird thing about performance, whether it's acting or stand-up. When you see a stand-up comedian, quote-unquote, struggling or an actor struggling, you're reminded of all your own fears and all your own insecurities and all your own challenges. But then when you see someone act in spite of those fears, then you all of a sudden are given this huge lesson where you're like, holy shit, I just saw someone almost crumble, but then they went for it. Uh-huh. And then you can use that. And that's why watching someone stumble and fail and get all nervous and nerve wracked in stand-up it feels terrible, because you're reminded of all of those times in your life when you were this scared little kid and didn't step up to the plate and didn't drive through those. So it was just a profound lesson. So I think the lesson is, anytime you're feeling that, it's a signal that you need to drive through it rather than sit down and be like, I mean, with some exceptions, there are some times where, yeah, maybe you need to sit down and take a break and get some sleep and drink some water and have some food if you're completely exhausted and you physically can't get through something. But a lot of the times it's just mentally up here. We don't think we can do it. But really, if we did, we would come out so much stronger. So, yeah, it was a huge day for us class-wise.
Yeah, and sometimes you get beaten down. Especially in this business, you get bogged down with not knowing. Or I know when I was growing up in theater school, like the basis of my beginning training was say the joke and get the fuck off the stage. And it wasn't a healthy environment to be in for 8+ years that I worked with that group. And like it wasn't. Looking back on it, I wish I had been stronger. I wish I wasn't looking for their approval the whole time. But I needed that to then go on and keep fighting and pushing past what I thought was my limitation. But it's not. I had so much more to give that they didn't see, that they didn't believe that I had. But I knew inside that I had more. And that it's pushing through that and knowing that you can do it no matter what. And I was talking with one of the people that came in for a session just before the podcast today. And like I was saying, like the beginnings, when you're first beginning acting, you're moving all about, right? And like you're stepping back sometimes when you're supposed to get into an emotional moment, but you need to stay still. You need to plant yourself. You need to say, no, I'm not moving. You're moving. And that brings out the competition, that brings out the fight. And today we were talking a lot about facial movements and how like getting all this going and all this stuff happening. Like if it's justified in the script, that's fine. But if it's not, like you can see the best actors in the world, they're not moving their fucking face. They're not moving whatsoever. Their stillness. Their stillness is justified. Their movements are justified. Their words are justified. This is what we're trying to get to. We're trying to get to the upper echelon of things. We're trying to push past what we believe is our limitations and go past that.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned something about the movement is Tom will say tension masks emotion. Mm-hmm. And the tension will always come out somewhere else too. So yeah, you see this a lot. You see shoulders. You see little hand things. Yeah, eyebrows. Or you see lean in. We all do this.
Yeah, 100%.
It's training that out of you. And the other thing that humans do that actors kind of the job is not to do. humans, when feelings and emotions come up, most of us, because of how we've been raised in society, want to hide that. Like,
yeah, retreat.
The second someone starts to a lip quiver or starts to break down a little bit or starts to tear up, often the response is to apologize for that rather than owning it. And as an actor, when that stuff comes up, that is not the time to take a breath. Like, you'll often see someone do a monologue and they'll get emotional in a part. And then right when they get emotional, rather than press and fight through that, they'll take a moment to take a breath and then calm down. Mm-hmm. But then all the emotion mm-hmm. and the steam is all out of that. And another thing that Tom mentioned today is hips, heart, head, meaning every great performance, it's got to have hips in it, meaning sensuality, sexuality, some cheekiness to it, some vim and vigor, testicular fortitude or ovarian fortitude. It's got to have hearts. So he's got to touch our hearts, and hopefully it connects with our minds as well. But those are also all the three chakras, and hips is the root chakra mm-hmm. and head is the top. So it's like if head, heart, and hips, starting with hips. And he always mentions, when you're searching for material, find something that you first react to hips wise. So it activates your sensuality and those kind of emotions. Then hopefully find something. The second thing is there should be something in the heart that it connects with you. It touches your heart. And then hopefully the head is there too. But you put all those three together, that's as activated as a human being can be. Like, that's mm-hmm. the maximum emotional being. When you go to see a theater show, or when you watch a movie that just fucking destroys you, it's because you were activated in the hips and in the heart and in the head, and you witnessed a fully functional human being displaying all of their emotions, all of their heart, head, and hips, rather than seeing someone who started to feel that stuff and jammed it all down. And I'm certainly being a guy and being a male, not a guy and a male. I am a male. often we're taught, like when we're growing up, like, boys don't cry, girls cry. Yep. And so all that stuff. And I feel I've worked through a lot of that, but still there's a lot of me sometimes. Now it's different. Now I think when that comes up, I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm there. Like if I'll even my Shakespeare monologue, if I get to the point where I'm emotional and kind of trembling or quivering or even a little watery tear eyes, I'm like, okay, that's I'm in the spot that I'm in the fucking pocket right now. Not like, oh shit, what's happening to me? Why am I doing this? I can't possibly show people that I would cry. Mm-hmm. And any, like, we've talked about this too. Anytime I'd put a million things on Facebook and on YouTube and videos, and I can count on one hand the things that I put on where I was pretty emotional and or even cried in it. And those things have always got the most touching responses. I've got more DMs and more comments from those things. And this is from a guy who's a comedian, and often being a wacky sketch comedian. And my intention often is to be doing wacky, crazy stuff to make people laugh and giggle. But it's actually been the times when I've made people cry that they've been the most impacted. So just the idea of don't hide from that. Don't shrink from that. And when you are feeling those emotions, just plow forward through them, not to avoid them, but to recognize them and maybe even to shine a light on them and hold those emotions up on a bit of a pedestal and be like, holy fuck, I'm human and I'm dealing with human things right now. That's not something to shrink away from.
Mm-hmm. We got a comment from Adam Daniel Mazze. The legal has landed. I can hear the grill sizzle from here. BK Broiler. Aye, aye, Cap.
Yes. 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 And Michael, throw Michael back up on here. Yeah. Michael says, brilliant conversation. Loved it. Thank you, Michael. I want to just share something about Michael that is amazing. It actually blows my mind. Probably for over a year now. I don't even originally know how we met. We might have met through Camille. I don't know that we've ever met in person. If we have, I apologize for not missing that. But Mike he DMs me every Friday, literally every Friday, almost like a wake-up call, saying, happy Friday, have a great day. And I'm like, who the fuck does that? And he does, in a good way, I don't mean that. who the fuck does that? I'm like, it blows my mind. And we're like, not that we're strangers. Now I feel like I do have a relationship with him. But thank you for doing that, Michael. I don't know anyone. No, well, I'll tell you, no one else does that. There's no one I know in my family, friends, or any circles who religiously on every Friday says, hey, have a great Friday. And it's this little thing, almost now it's this little thing, like who does it first? Like I'll beat him. Sometimes I'll beat him and I'll be like, oh, Michael's slacking. It's already the afternoon and he hasn't said happy Friday, and I'll beat him to it. But I love that, Michael. Thank you. And thank you for commenting and being a part of the lives.
And I want to give a shout out to Adam today. I pushed him really hard today for his auditions. I really tried to get him to stay as still as possible and to really let love hit him and the success hit him. And he did a masterful job today. You really did such a fantastic job with your audition. He booked two sessions with me, one in the morning over Zoom to just go over the script, the sides, and just talk about what was going on. And we rehearsed it a bunch and we just did it like a stop, start, go through and talk through it and kept like finding great ideas and finding all these different places that we could implement choices and implement the guideposts and implement viewpoints. And Adam, I just really want to give you a shout out today because you really did such a fantastic job with your audition. So thank you for that. It was a pleasure working with you and a pleasure watching you today. Thank you.
Nice. Glad to hear it. Yeah. And then something that Tom mentioned today that really resonated, and it's kind of in the same vein, is it's for all of us, it's reaching that point of authenticity where we just trust what we are is enough. Having the full range of emotions, like you can't be just a flat human being and think, oh, that's going to be enough, and just have no emotion on anything, and all of your words sound the same. Like that's not gonna move people. Mm-hmm. But there's often a spectrum of fear happening. One is a feeling of being too much, so you do flatten things out. Mm-hmm. And you do everything very small and you're like, oh, I don't want to be too much, or I don't want to be too big, or what if, and people will have the thoughts. Often he's coaching people and he'll offer a suggestion. What about this? And they'll be like, ah, shit, I actually thought of that. And then I just thought it was too much, which is fear, because you're like, oh, you have an idea. He also says first thought, best thought. Often our first thought, because it's come directly from source or the universe or whatever you want to call that, your first spark of genius is often your best, but then we justify it or we rationalize it or intellectualize it into convincing ourselves that, oh, no, that's too much. That's a little too edgy. Or what if my agent doesn't like it? Or what if casting doesn't like it? And then the reverse is sometimes we feel that we're not enough, and that's when you got to push to be too much. And that's probably the spectrum where I often land on is, maybe I am doing too much, where that's where you get in the facial stuff and too much with your hands, or feeling that you got to put on a voice that's not yours all the time. Or the lean in to punctuate all of your words. And so,
or like finding that taking all this, putting in the punctuation.
Right. Emphasizing the acting punctuation. Acting between the lines, where you say a word and then look over here and go, like that. People in real life don't do that, and that's why it's a reminder of act according to the speed of life. Don't act like a daytime soap opera. Mm-hmm. And the trap is, you'll see people act like that and you're like, oh, well, he's an actor, he's on TV, he's had a successful career, but I mean, is that really what do you want to be? A soap opera actor, or do you want to be one of those actors that really affects the molecules of people, and they see you and they're like, oh my God, I was so moved by everything you do. So it is that sweet spot. It's, and really, again, it's fear versus love. It's loving yourself and trusting yourself and trusting the text too. That's why good writing, it's like, you can't argue with Shakespeare. You can't argue with Tennessee Williams. You can't argue with any of these prolific writers, because the writing is amazing. So if you just trust the writing, that's all you need to do.
Now, really. I don't want that to get confused with don't fuck with the writing, because I firmly believe that you need to, as Tom likes to say, pee on it and make it yours.
Right.
Because, like, nothing is sacred. Shakespeare is not sacred. Like, yes, the words are important, and you need to be word perfect, especially in Shakespeare, because each word has an important meaning to it. But Shakespeare didn't really care. I mean, not that he didn't care, but he wasn't really all that active in making sure that his works were archived. That wasn't his thing. Like, his friends got together and made sure that his famous works were continued on, and like they were in a book, and like they were there, and like they were able to pass it down. But like, Shakespeare didn't exactly have an input in that. It wasn't his idea to be like, yes, we need to save everything. We need, everything is sacred in what I wrote. It is the greatest writing of all time. Right. It is now being perceived that, and it is now being put on this pedestal. But like, you do need to pee on your Shakespeare.
Right. And what you mean by pee on it is you need to be a real person. You need to personalize it. And that's the trap in a lot of Shakespeare is, all of a sudden I have to be this huge performative thou wilt, that, like, you're in using all this fancy language. But then if you step away from that, you're like, I've never seen a human being do those things and talk like that. That's not mm-hmm. a human. So it is humanizing things and personalized things. And at the end of the day, casting does really want to see you. Because, hello, it is you. It's not a character. It's not mm-hmm. them or he or her. It's fucking you. It's your body. It's your voice. And you're opposite another human being. So it's the trap of, if you're playing the idea of a character, which I 100% have been guilty of a million times. And when I first started working on Shakespeare, that's the instinct, is to be this, and just put on this affect of your voice. And then you're like, that's not a human being. I've never seen anyone like that before. So it's how to personalize it and be you under those extraordinary circumstances, but still you, knowing that you are the classic snowflake analogy, where there's no one as interesting as you, because there's no one like you. So if you actually are true to yourself and then add these words and the given circumstances of the writing, then you're going to potentially show something brilliant, because there's nobody like you. Mm-hmm. But if you're putting on this mask or this separation where the script and the character is here, I'm Lars, but this is this guy. And you can tell when people's language too. I find anytime you're talking to someone and they're like, well, I think that she is, or, well, I think that he is, or, mm-hmm. or they're, if they're using the character's name and not being like, well, in this scene, I'm going into the restaurant and I want to win this argument and I want to win her over and she's the love of my life. And I want. Yes. It has to be yes. that.
Yeah.
It can't be them, because that's weird. Also, I've heard people say, if you're doing that, or people who will like, replace this other people in their life for the person that they're acting across of, then that leaves the person that you're acting with out of the scene as well. So if I'm like, say for example, I'm having a terrible argument with a spouse, and I'm thinking about an ex I had, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I'm going to use all that for her. There's a human in front of you. So you have to use that human. Yeah, you can imbue your imagination and take some things from your past, but mm-hmm. it's still the reality that it's you in that moment. It's not a character. It's not they. And Tom always says, if you think it's a he or a she or a they, casting will cast him or her or them and not you.
That's a great line.
Funny, right?
Yeah, no, it is. It works perfectly. I want to read this comment. I love Lars mentioned that he shoots hoops as he internalizes his Shakespeare lines. I do the same thing, pairing my line study with a physical activity, my personal way of peeing on the script. That's awesome, Adam. And I've always been subscribed to my first thing, especially when I get up with a script, is I do stepping the text. So I step on each word of the line. It internalizes it. It physicalizes it for me, gets me grounded into the world that I'm in, and it helps memorize. I have memorized 8 pages in 20 minutes. And like, we're not supposed to be memorizing. We're supposed to be rehearing things, but it is my first step in that process of rehearing things and making sure that I can get it on its feet and get it off the page. Right. So I've always, and like you doing the hoops and doing those Shakespeare lines while doing it, like it's fantastic. It's awesome. Like it's so much fun to do it. And like when you get it in on those sentences or finishing those thoughts and you get it in, it's like, it's a little victory, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think with rehearsing too is the one of the biggest caveats is don't do it the same way. Do it different every single time, especially in rehearsing. Yeah. Maybe as you get closer to performance, you're going to be crafting it and stripping away things and being like, yeah, that was fun, but I'm not going to say it that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That crazy movement or action was nice, but I'm going to tone that down a little bit. You can do that, but do it in different voices. Do it in different accents. Do it while you're doing it. Like do it while you're doing the dishes. Do it while you're going for a run.
Yes.
Do a speedy run to it, but not without the feeling. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should ever do it. Sometimes there's people, I've seen people sort of in between takes. They're like, oh, yeah, just give me a second for the words. And they go, and I'm like, there's no value in that. Like you're not, if you're just like, sort of the idea of an Italian, I'm okay with an Italian for time's sake, but it can't be an Italian where you've separated the words.
Yeah.
You can't lose all the intention and lose the hips, heart and head connection to those words. And again, we talk about 250 times. Saying things and that can be in different voices. That's while you're doing different tasks around here, wake up and do it one way, do it another way, just not getting locked into it. Because the reality too is every time you're on set, things are going to be different. So if you have it locked in a certain way and then the director gives you a redirect or blocking prevents you from doing it that way, or maybe the other actor gives you something that you weren't expecting, or they don't give you something that you were expecting, you're not going to be like, oh, well, can you please say it this way for me? Because the way I rehearsed it 1,000 times is on this line, I yell at you. And it doesn't make sense if I yell at you, if you didn't yell your line, like things like that. You can't get locked into that. And if you're doing theater work, especially if you're doing a longer run, it's got, and Tom mentioned this today as well, it can't be the same every night because you're not the same every night. And if you're trying to make the performance letter by letter, beat by beat, word by word, second by second, moment by moment, the same, it's going to come across as false because the real reality is you're different every night. You are different every night. Shit happens to you. You got a weird phone call. You had something fucked up that happened to you or something amazing that happened to you. So there needs to be like a 10 to 20% variance in just the liveliness of it.
And the audience is different every night as well, right? And they want something different every night. It's not like, I always subscribe to within the first 10 lines, you need to A, establish yourself as your character on stage. And you also need to listen to where you get the first laugh. Where you get the first laugh will determine how you go about the rest of the show. Because each audience is different and they're listening to different parts, right? And they're hearing this for the first time. And sometimes they'll want, or like they won't know that they want it like this. But like sometimes when you deliver something, it has to be just like this tiny bit different because A, it'll give you something new to play with, and B, it's pleasing for them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, under the category of just rehearsing too, it was given to us as a Shakespeare rehearsal technique, but I think it applies to anything. And we're going to have her on the show in a few weeks, Mary Lou Rosato, who's a brilliant actress herself in all avenues, but especially Shakespeare, Juilliard trained, and she's taught all over the world, really. One of the exercises was to go through your, if it's a monologue, for example, but you could do this as a scene, mm-hmm. just with your words, without the other character's words, is on all of the verbs, so all of the action words, to do some kind of pushing movement. So maybe you have a pillow, or it could even be a punch or a push, mm-hmm. just to get you in the energy of actions and affecting your other characters and your other scene partners. And then the other one is saying just the nouns, but when you say the noun, so person, place, or thing, which those are, you have to have feelings about all those nouns, but it's saying, go through your monologue and say only the nouns, and picture or imagine in your head you're saying these to basically an alien or someone that doesn't speak your language, and through how you say them, through how you say them vocally, and through maybe a paired action to it, say them in such a way where you're saying them like the word sounds, so that an alien would start to get a feel for it. So in like, and it could be something simple, like my monologue, the first noun is day, and I can just say day, day, mm-hmm. day, and it's nothing. But I can also say day.
Yep.
I can say day. Day, or you could say love, 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 or you can say love, 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 like you. And I'm doing a lot of extra facial stuff here, which mm-hmm. you probably don't need to be
but doing, like this is part of that rehearsal process, right?
Yeah,
because as Tom talks about, like, you go full balls to the wall, like, go make all of your choices, and then if they just need to bring you back a little bit, like, that's it,
right?
That's easy to right. do.
And it's the idea of with those nouns, it's the underlying idea of you need to, the audience needs to know how you feel about everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you're speaking a list of names, they should all be different. You shouldn't just list names and then you're like, oh, well, it seems like he cares about all three of those people. But one was his brother, one was his mother, and one was his wife. There should be something different on those. Or if it's places, or if it's a food, if it's a list of food.
Well, because you have a different relationship with each, right?
Of course. Yeah. Of course. So it's just imbuing nouns with feeling and emotion, rather than flattening everything out. Because like you said, if they do want a flat read, they can always be like, hey, that was great. Throw it all away. Say it like you didn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you want the job, then do that. Ultimately, that's probably not going to get you the largest lead roles in the world, maybe.
But like, that's what they wanted you to do. You came in, right. You made your choices. You got the callback. Right. They're saying to you now, take it back.
Right.
And you do that, and then you book it. Because right. you're A, doing the thing that they want you to do, and B, like, you're being a good actor because you're just able to take it and do it. You're not taking anything personally what they're saying. You're just doing the best you can be.
Yeah, and you're fluid and flexible. Like, you're an instrument. So you got to be able to move your body different ways. You got to be able to say things different with vocal variation and different emotions and feelings attached to them. And it's got to all be truthful. It's all got to be personal because it is you. And it's just got to come across as a real human being with all the emotions. That's why in our class, we often say actors really are professional human beings.
Yeah.
That's really what we're attempting to do. Actors aren't just people who memorize lines and are able to say them. It's otherwise everyone would do it. And you could just be an actor with no training.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, this has been great. This has been a good chat.
Yeah.
Good old
chat. I like how we walked into this. We're like, I don't know what we're gonna talk about.
we didn't have a guest, and we were both busy over the weekend, so we didn't have a ton of structure to this, but I think lots of
great stuff, gems.
And I think one thing worth saying too, and you sort of mentioned it, is you said expectations. When we were talking about expectations and sort of going with the flow or not getting what you want. I mm-hmm. think you got to act like anything in life. You got to act to seek your own approval first. So rather than being like, oh, will they like me or will they like this? Will my agent like this? Will casting like this? No, you got to decide who you are and who you are as a craftsman, and what you want to deliver and how you want to shape and craft this, and then put it out in the world and feel good about that. Because then, you know what? I fucking love that performance. It felt great. It was authentic. I put a lot of time and love and energy to it. I made some really bold choices. Fuck it if you didn't like that. Honestly, if you didn't like that, then don't cast me in it. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But I liked it. And that's what I would give you on the day. Not to say that you can't take direction, but don't act from a place of fear. Like, oh, is this going to be, it's my least favorite thing to hear when someone comes in and be like, oh, I don't know what they want. It's like, yeah, you don't know what they want. So decide what the fuck you want in your life and in this scene as an actor. Decide who your relationship is to the person you're talking to, mm-hmm. and what it is you're fighting for, and then go get it as a human being with a full range of emotions. And being a unique person, you're probably going to show something brilliant. But also, it's the idea of, yeah, you can, of having patience in this career. You don't know when you're going to, when certain doors are going to be open, but certain doors, you just can't wait for them to open. You just need to fucking make your own doors and, or kick doors down, or just make your own building and let people into your doors rather than being like, oh, well, when will I get this career changing opportunity? Like you mentioned booking that one role in your head. And I had this experience early on too, where I the first few big things I was like, I've arrived. Now they're going to know me. Like now that I'm a lead in this thing or that thing, I'm, this is my ticket. And sometimes there are those moments where it's like there's certain projects and certain things where such a light is shone on people that they do blow up, but that still doesn't mean that they didn't spend 10 or 20 years before working on their craft and figuring all that out. But we're just in a world right now where you don't need to wait for that. You write your own stuff. You shoot your own stuff. You be bold and you be a little audacious. Mm-hmm. I heard a great story. This was a great, it was a great Thanksgiving table story. One of our guests at dinner last night, he was a longtime musician, longtime music teacher, has conducted orchestras and big groups of musicians. And he learned of a story. It was a vocalist. She actually turned out to be, she played Christine, the lead role in Phantom of the Opera, but she didn't really have formal training, but she had this incredible voice. And everyone was telling her like, oh, you're never going to make it in the business unless you've gone to this conservatory or that conservatory. And they're impossible to get into if you did, like, at this point, you already, like, you would have had to come up through the ranks to do it. And she was just like, well, who do I need to audition for? Where do I need to go? And someone told her, she went to what I forget the conservatory that it was, but she literally went to that place. She sat outside all day long. And then she just started singing at the end of the day. So the guy comes out and is like, who the fuck are you? And her voice was fucking amazing. So she had something to like, wasn't like she was terrible. But she just went there instead of being like, oh, well, no, you'll never get in, or no, you have to apply, or well, the applications are already closed, so you're out of luck. She just fucking went there and kind of waited around, quote, like a little bit of stalking maybe, but not in a, she was charming enough to pull it off.
Yeah.
And just sang for this guy. And he's like, oh yeah, let me, what do you got? Sing something for me. Mm-hmm. And she did, blew him the fuck away. And then next thing you know, he's asking, well, where did you come from? Who are you? How did you get here? And then he's like begging her to join them so that he can coach her because he's recognizing the genius in her, but all because she didn't sit back and wait for that. And then the next thing you know, she's a lead on Broadway fulfilling all of her dreams, but only because she took the step to go get something that a bunch of people told her she couldn't get because of this reason or that reason. She just went out and took it. So I think the one of the lessons today is Thanksgiving, be thankful for everything, but also just go get what you want and then thank yourself for getting it rather than waiting for someone else to give it to you and then say thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Just, you don't have something, go make it happen. If you need help, recruit a community, recruit people like us at Laughing Vikings to help you get the help you need, get the training you need, but just be relentless in the pursuit of the life that you want to lead. Again, not the expense of happiness where you're like, oh, until I get this thing, I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah.
But being happy and grateful with everything that you got, recognizing your power, that you got everything that you ever need right now. And really, if you really look at it, you're perfect and life is perfect now. But then at the same time, be relentless in your growth and improvement and moving forward, and just don't let anyone stop you.
Yeah. If you build it, they will come.
They will come. They will come.
They will.
Kevin Costner, that was a good lesson. If you build it, just go build a baseball field in the middle of a cornfield, yeah. And sooner or later, a bunch of dead Hall of Famers will probably come play and you'll sell a bunch of tickets. Yeah, so if we build a theater here.
So take a page from Kevin Costner's book and go build your baseball field.
That's what Comedy Alley is. Comedy Alley is exactly 100%. That. That was nothing. That was an alley. And yeah, fuck yeah. Did I ever want stage time after lockdown? And then I just saw an alley and I was like, you know what? If we put a spotlight and a riser and some chairs, here's a show. You know, mm-hmm. I once got a fortune cookie, and I don't know, somewhere on Facebook I have the picture, but the fortune in it, it was like, said something like, the world is waiting, create your own stage. And I kept that for a long time. I physically don't have it, but it's just the idea. If you're an artist, don't wait for someone to ask or pay you for your art. Put it out there. If you're a singer, have your voice heard, you know, sing, get out there and sing, go play the guitar, go bus, go do all those things. Like, there's a lot of amazing musicians and none of their songs have ever been heard because they don't play them. They haven't been offered the right gigs. They haven't, no studio executive has come to them and be like, hey kid, you got the goods. But if they had just fucking gone to the corner every day and belted it out, who knows where they'd be? Maybe the right person walks by, or maybe that doesn't need to happen. Maybe they just go to their home studio and record it and put everything there on, by themselves on Spotify. They would make the money they need to make and fulfill all their dreams. So it's just like, don't wait for that stuff. There's no time.
We got another comment from Adam saying, you guys rock. I'm flowing with every single word.
Good.
We love it.
Good. All right. You got a quote to inspire our day. Hopefully we're already inspired by this, but you got something for us?
I do have something for us. Let me just find the banner.
Go get it. Just fucking go get it. Just go get it. Just go get it. I'm just pumping people up right now.
Oh, do it. You want to?
Just get it. Don't wait.
Don't wait. Do it.
And I mean, you never, nobody on their deathbed ever regrets things that they tried and failed at. They only regret things they didn't try. And then they wonder. And then they're like, oh, fuck, I wish I had lived. You know, now I'm dying and I didn't, like, you're barely dying because you barely lived. So in order to die, you got to live first. So live first so that when you die, you can actually die and be like, I'm dying right now. And that sucks because my life was so fucking dope because I actually went for it. Mm-hmm. Instead of being like, oh shit, I'm dying and I'm not so sure I even lived. You know, that's just like, that's the ultimate heartbreak for anyone who's seen a family member or friend like that, or anyone who's been in any hospice situation or an old folks home. Go to an old folks home and ask people about their lives. And it's just the saddest thing you're going to hear is regrets.
Yeah. So our quote to inspire our week this week is from Oprah Winfrey. Be thankful for what you have. You'll end up having more. If you concentrate on what you don't have, you will never, ever have enough. And that's perfect for today, A, because it's Thanksgiving, and B, because this is exactly what we've been talking about today.
It's law of attraction, baby. Law of attraction. Yeah, it doesn't matter what it is. Financial, like if you're in a weird financial situation right now, if you're walking around worrying about bills, you're literally pushing money away from you. Mm-hmm. You're, all of the energy in it, all of your thoughts is pushing it all away from you rather than realizing, hey, you know what? I live in a world of fucking complete abundance. There's never been more money in the world. There's never been more opportunity in the world. At the click of a button right here, if you have a smartphone and internet, you could be Jeff Bezos eventually. And if you don't need to be Jeff Bezos, you can certainly make some money in a hurry. Yeah, it's just that idea of you focus on what you have and what you want. Don't never focus on what you don't have, because you'll just get more of that shit.
It's the same as like living in the present rather than focusing on what you didn't get in the past, or focusing on what you could maybe get in the future. Just enjoy the present. Enjoy the moments. Enjoy those things where you're toiling and fighting and maybe failing a couple times, but like when you fail, it's just a new opportunity will present itself. That's all it is. It's not anything you've done. It's learning to be better and be bolder and more confident.
Yeah, this is no failure. It's that idea of you win or you learn.
Yes.
You know, it's a win. Yeah. It's not failure. It's feedback. Mm-hmm. That kind of idea. That's great. That's great. I don't know that there's anything else we can say, but just go fucking get it.
Have a fantastic week, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for being a part of the Laughing Vikings family. We so appreciate everything that you guys have given us. We so appreciate you tuning in. We so appreciate you guys listening to this podcast, and thank you for everything that you guys have done for us.
And please share this out. Again, we always say this. We don't say it enough, though, I don't think. If you're getting any value from this, or you have, share this out on whatever platform you're watching or listening to. Tag us as well if you want. Also, any actors that are watching and or listening, if you want help with an audition, go to laughingvikings.com/gift, G-I-F-T, and Brandon will bring it up. And we'll give you your first self-tape session here at the studio for free or via Zoom. Mm-hmm. It's kind of our teaser test. And I know that a ton of people, it's been transformational to have some help. If you're doing it alone right now, or if you're only doing it with family and friends, even if you have a setup at home, there's something to working with another actor and relieving yourself of all the tech pressures to just, the only thing you got to focus on is being a human being and being a human being under the given circumstances of the script that you're given, and just focusing on having fun between action and cut and not worrying about all the extra tech stuff. So hit us up. We'll be happy to help. And the majority of people who do end up switching to become members too. So check out the membership as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, everybody, and enjoy your week. Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye. No, you hang up. No, you hang up.
You hang up. No, you hang up.
Okay, we'll both hang up.